Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Ramble Force, and a Merry Christmas.
Ho, ho, ho.
Thank you very much. It's the Football Ramble, ladies and gentlemen, and it is the Christmas special.
How special is it going to be on a scale of 1 to 10?
Extremely special. 11.
Okay.
Yeah. It's unbelievably Christmassy, Jeff.
Oh, dear. Let me introduce you to three sex gods I call the Ramblers. Pete Donaldson.
Hello.
Lukey Moore.
All right.
And James or Jim.
Hey.
There they are. thanks, chaps. We're going to start with a question, which is... It's an email, actually, from Mark Smith. He says, hello, Ramble, I live in Cambodia.
Cambodia.
Showing off.
And he says, I've come up against some great but strange players over here. He said, the one team I've played against has a midget, and I just can't nutmeg him. So, he's wondering who our most favourite obscure player is.
Okay.
So, he says that he lets little orphans listen to the podcast out in Cambodia. Not the swearing bits, though.
No.
But he says they don't have a clue what's going on, but
that
Merry
makes five
Christmas
of us.
So, yeah, thanks for that, Mark. Nice. Most obscure players.
So, when we mean obscure, do we mean just sort of, what kind of obscure are we talking?
What have you got in your head?
What have I got in my head? Right,
best not go
you
there.
You don't want to know that, but I'm going to select a specifically relevant bit, and I'm going to go for Robin Friday,
the old
Reading player, who was just a massive, massive pisshead and really, really drug-addled, but he was a genius, apparently. Like, the people that managed him always said that he should have played for England and stuff like that, but he just had such a sort of party lifestyle. I think he had a row with one of his managers and said, like... you've lived twice as long as me and led half the life or something like that. Apparently he started off his career at Hayes and they started a game without him once because he was in the pub, and apparently he came on, was absolutely hammered, and the defenders weren't even bothering to mark him. He was
right,
so
yeah.
drunk, and he actually scored the winner.
Yeah,
hey,
which is nice.
And then he finished off his crisps.
Yeah. There's a book called The Greatest Footballer You Never Saw about him. It's written by the guy from Oasis as well.
Weirdly. Paul McGuigan.
That's right, with Paolo Hewitt as well. He apparently used to just rock up to games with a carrier bag.
Oh, yeah.
Right, and the carrier bag used to just have a bottle of martini in it. That's it. That's what he used to turn up to the games with.
I mean, that's less of a footballer and more of just an alcoholic who happens to play
football. Yeah. Yeah.
Actually... the Super Furry Animals song, Man Don't Give a Fuck, is about him, isn't
yeah.
it?
It is, yeah. He's on the front cover. That's a great shout.
Lukey, who have you got?
I'll go with someone slightly different, but someone who sort of came from nowhere and didn't really do an awful lot afterwards. Toto Scarlatti.
Oh, yeah.
Sort of a reasonably late addition to the Italian squad, and then it was top scorer in the
1990, yeah.
Yeah, it was top scorer, and they didn't really do an awful lot apart from that. So I'd say he's probably the most obscure player.
Well, it was incredible, really, wasn't it? Because he wasn't... a massively known player on the world scene.
No, not
before the World Cup. I think he was decent.
Yeah, well, he obviously was.
But he suddenly bang at the World Cup, and then after that, he, as you say, didn't really do too much.
He took the penalty in the third place playoff to get the sixth goal, didn't he? Because didn't badge
that's right against against England. Yeah.
I used to have a little sort of movie player that had a tiny roll of film. It took an AA battery, and you had to put it up to a light. And it was David Platt's volley and Scalacci's goal.
Was it?
Right, yeah.
It's nice. That's probably worth a bit of cash now.
Yeah, I throw it away.
Yeah. Throw it in the tank.
Throw it on the fire.
Pete, who are you going to go for?
Little orphans in Cambodia. I'd like to tell you a story about a young man by the name of Brian Honor. He's a bit of a Hartlepool legend.
He played for
Darlington, Spennymoor, and Peter Lee and Hartlepool, most notably. He was voted player of the season like three times.
What were two of those two? Spennymoor?
Spennymoor.
They sound like villages in Postman Pat. Is that a real place?
Probably looks like it.
Is that right?
He was a bit of a legend, and his kind of claim to fame was he got them promoted, he scored a few goals and stuff, and he scored from a corner, quite memorable.
Oh, nice.
On the windiest day, let's not forget. He set up like a little club, the Brian Honor Club, which I used to attend quite a lot in the summer, and he would occasionally grace us with his presence.
Fantastic.
How come he didn't play at a high level then? He just didn't fancy it.
He just wasn't that good. But he was probably one of the better Hartlepool players in the old third division.
That's cool, man.
Yeah, nice fella though.
There we go, Marcus.
Yeah. I'm going to go for a chap called Wayne Foster. Now, Wayne Foster, a former Hearts player. Mm-hmm. I've no idea what he's doing now, but it's similar to yours, Luke. He sort of did something and then disappeared. However, it wasn't top scorer at the World Cup. It was coming on for Hearts against Hibs in, I think it was the Scottish Cup quarterfinal. Forgive me if I'm wrong there, Hearts and Hibs fans. He came on, and it was 1-1, and he scored the winner. And went mental, proper kind of jumped up into the fans kind of celebration.
Yeah.
And I only played a handful of games or something for Hearts later. Again, someone will have to email in about that. But yeah, he just, all Hearts fans love him and know him. And,
it's weird, isn't it? There's the odd player that plays about three or four games.
That's
and they
right.
do something incredibly memorable.
Yeah.
And it sticks in people's minds.
Do you remember, this reminds me of a guy called Roy Essendow, who was involved on...
Oh, big time! There you go.
Yeah. In Wicked Wanderers Cup Run, when they got signed him off Teletext or something.
That's right.
And
for 80 quid in a Mars bar or something.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he scored for
against Leicester.
Yeah, that's right.
In the FA Cup. Yeah. That might have been quarter final.
Yeah,
I think it was quarter final. Scored a header in the last minute, won them the game.
And that was under Sanchez at Wickham.
That was under Sanchez,
One of the most eluded men in football.
But yeah.
The luckiest manager of all time.
Masterminded a Northern Irish win against England.
Masterminded.
Well, you know, it's still in the history books. The points are definitely going to go to James or Jim Campbell.
Yes! Oh, it's just favouritism, man.
He said Friday.
I haven't won one for such a long time.
Yeah, you haven't.
And I introduced it to the Cambodians.
Yeah. Because you will not learn.
I'm
inclusive.
Seriously, though, cut this bit out, but up your game, yeah?
Up yours.
Oh dear, oh dear. Well, that leads us on nicely to tell the listeners that the Ramble Drinks was on the weekend.
Yeah.
And Saturday the 19th of December, bloody marvellous.
Yeah, thanks for everyone coming down.
Thank you so much for everybody who came. There was millions of people. Yeah. For all those who didn't turn up.
Yeah. Don't look at the pictures.
There's loads of girls as well.
Yeah, really sexy ones.
Took their tops off.
Yeah, and there were models. That was a really good day. It was a turnout. It was a superb day. And there was some character. We met Steve Hobbs, the man who did the ramble roll.
Yeah, the Maverick Baker.
Maverick Baker. He just rocked straight in and walked up to me and went, "Hey, I'm Steve Hobbs. Yeah, I'll do the ramble roll." I just gave him a big hug.
Okay, Steve, what's the ramble roll this week? And he went, "It's not lobster and pheasant, I'll tell you that." No, it's good. Nice bunch of people. One or two twats, but you I'm only joking.
But genuinely, we were sort of. I was expecting a couple of people. The vast proportion, obviously, being awesome.
Yeah.
But I sort of expected about five or six people to be a bit mental, a bit, let's say, geeky even.
Yeah, yeah.
And I realised that. They were us. We were the worst people in the room, sadly.
By some distance.
That happens to me all the time, though.
One guy actually tried to crack on to my missus. Yeah. So,
sorry about that, mate. Do you do it as well?
We had a couple of lads from Scotland there.
Yeah, someone travelled. Gordon travelled all the way down from Scotland.
Yeah, yeah. A couple of lads from Birmingham.
Yeah, yeah.
A couple of lads from Chatham. Richie from India.
But he wasn't here especially.
Well, no, but he's only been in the country a little while, but he's been listening to us loads out in India.
It's brilliant.
It's turned up. It's fabulous. Great. Thank you, lads.
Yeah, we'll do another one at the end of the season, so more of you can come.
It was very, very good. A guy called Alex Sheedy sent me a message today, Luke, saying that one of his friends had said the guy who looks like the blonde Jesus really shouldn't be wearing skinny jeans at his size.
Outrageous.
Somebody called him the Ramble Trap.
Yeah, let's see if it... Let's see if he's there at the end of the season drinks. Well with him, yeah.
You and your guest list.
Pete, can we ban people from iTunes? Can you do that? Absolutely disgraceful. I may live under a bridge, but it's my right to wear whatever jeans I want.
Well, it's a bloody good bridge, that.
Yeah.
I got a couple of Jedwoods. It's fine. It's
oh, all, did
it's
you?
Abroad, it's abroad there. Yeah. Church.
The Church of Jedwood.
Oh, dear. But yeah, no,
but that's really, well, I don't know about that. That's really soured it for me, that is. No, and that's fine. I'd now had a shit time.
It was one of those mornings, the morning after, where you wake up and sort of scan your mind for anything terrible you did. I think we all sort of did all right, actually. We all escaped.
Nobody died. Well, actually, maybe put a message out on the list. Did anyone die?
A boy from Manchester stole one of my shoes as well.
Oh, yeah, that's
I got
right.
it back, though. I got it back.
Did someone break
authority,
a chair
as respect.
Well?
If someone broke a chair, we've got to apologise to the pub for that. Apparently, well, that's been sorted.
Andrew
out.
From Scotland, he brought us down some tablet.
Yeah, he did.
And
yeah,
I was trying to distribute it at the end of the evening.
I ate it on the tube.
Did you?
It was delicious. Mine.
What?
I didn't get it.
No, I took yours. You left, and I thought, well, I'll have his as well.
When he brought that down, I said, right, I'll just put that over there with all the other presents. That was the only present we got.
Well, I was trying to distribute the tablet at the end. I was like, hey, try a bit of this. Nobody was having it.
No?
Nobody was having it.
People were too drunk.
Maybe.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks to everyone who came along. Thanks to the guy who looked like Pepe Reina.
Yeah.
Thanks to the guy who looked like Samir Nasri.
Yeah.
There's a lot of football lookalikes doing the round.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
Thanks to Paul Pescasolino. Oh,
thank you very
right.
much.
Sorry,
yeah. Well,
Someone made a shout out for me. Alexi Lalas.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
you can see it.
Your beard's getting a bit long.
No, I haven't got a goatee, though, have I?
No, you're just getting
Stop
there,
having a go at me. Move on.
Yeah, so thank you again for everybody for coming. Marvellous occasion, and hopefully we'll do another one.
Yeah, maybe, end of the season or something.
Yeah, we should do another one.
Something like that. In the Premier League, Mark Hughes is out of a job.
It's a shame, isn't it?
Two wins in the last 11 Premier League games is clearly not in line with the targets we agreed and set, said the Man City board. And they felt that there was no evidence that the situation would fundamentally change.
It's maddeningly predictable.
Well, it's not going to fundamentally change. They're always going to be playing football. We're not. The model is going to be the same. It's going to be football. So it won't fundamentally change.
Well, you are talking to Gary Cook and friends.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So woeful jibs ahoy. Oh,
yeah, the woeful jib, yeah.
Hoist the woeful jib. set a course for shitbag City.
Ali. The thing is, they do this every couple of seasons, Man City. Usually when they're about mid-table.
Yeah. They're not doing too bad. Well,
they're sixth, for crying out loud.
They're six points off a Champions League spot with a game in hand and 11 points off the top spot. Now, they're not going to win the league. I think that's pretty obvious. But it's Christmas. 11 points off the top spot.
They've only lost two games all season.
Yeah. It's something like that.
It's all about stability. When look what's happened at QPR, they're not kicking on because there's no stability there.
Absolutely. Mm.
I know they didn't hire Mark Hughes, but
well, that's it.
Do you think
that's the reason then?
Of course it is.
The weirdest thing about it is that when it all sort of kicked off, they'd all said, like all the reports were saying that Mancini was actually in the stadium, which apparently wasn't true. But that is awful. That's like dumping someone by introducing them to your new girlfriend, isn't it? That's just awful.
I'd like to think that Roberto Mancini, obviously I don't know him, but I'd like to think he's a man of class. So hopefully he wasn't there, but. He's only got the talk now that is. I mean, they originally said it's a 3.5 year contract, but the talk now is that like he might only be for 6 months.
Oh, yeah, crying out.
Apparently, the sort of the rumor is that if they don't finish in the top four, then they'll be free to sack him, basically. But
he's hardly like a Gus Hiddink sort of creature, sort of.
Well,
speak.
He
He's got a bit of. They just went for a sort of big name to sort of go. Well, this guy's a bit better, isn't he? And I think Brian Kidd's quite a good move. I kind of trust him a little bit.
Well,
more.
Brian Kidd will obviously know the English game, and Mancini's won a lot of things at Inter. He won three titles in a row, but the rest of the teams were shit.
Yeah, exactly. And just, like two of them, one of them got relegated. Their main rival, and there wasn't much of a. He got handed one title, so
it's very true.
I think it's a strange move. I think that the thinking behind it is probably that if they try and buy big in January, then Mancini's at least a name who's played or managed in the Champions League, and he can maybe attract players. Which I don't think they think Mark Hughes can attract players. That's the problem.
Well, do you think that perhaps that? I mean, they clearly the board bought Rubinho and Hughes. We've talked about that. And maybe one or two other signings they might have lined up, and Hughes has said, no, I don't want these sort of big players. Rubinho's maybe causing a little bit of
unrest
in the changing room.
It kind of looks like he's being played, though Hughes doesn't want to play him.
Do you think that there's a bit of animosity between Hughes and the board? They're sort of saying, let's bring in this player and let's bring in this player, you know, like the Galactico kind of thing. And Hughes is like, no, we don't need that.
I think let's bling in this player. They were mistaken. Yeah. It's actually incredibly relevant.
I think that it's one of those things where the boundaries need to be set. So if you've got a model like in Spain where the board or the president or whoever does the signings and then the coach just coaches, then fine. But look, I remember I watched goals on Sunday, and they were saying that, you know, they keep changing the goalposts around. They keep saying, you know, this is happening and you're the manager, but at the same time he's getting players he doesn't want. But I mean, like Jason McAteer on Sunday...
Is he coming in?
He called Mark Hughes the best young manager in Europe. It's a bit outrageous.
Like,
Pep Guardiola's got something to say about that.
Yeah. Well, I was about to say.
Yeah. Yeah.
But people point to things like Dunn leaving and people coming in. But it's the big sort of marquee signings like Rubinho that inflates the rest of the signings. I mean, Bellamy's been good, Given's been good, and they probably were... Like, I think Given
probably
was quite
huge.
Cheap, and Bellamy is a fairly good player for a fairly decent price if he can stay fit. But, I mean, people like Lescott, who've kind of let the side down...
20-odd million, was it, for Lescott?
Exactly, yeah. but it's because... The big signings like Rubinho, that just inflates every single thing else.
Yeah.
It's
just, well, you can see now Wenger's. You can see why Wenger was happy to let Adeboye go now.
Yeah,
if he doesn't fancy it, which he clearly doesn't at the moment, he's absolutely toilet.
Yeah,
he doesn't put any effort in. No. And so, you know, Wenger. Okay, fair enough. They probably need the money, so they haven't been able to reinvest it that much, but. We knew at the time that Adebayor was probably going to be a sort of disruptive influence in the dressing room, and that's obviously why Wenger's let him go, isn't it?
It's a funny one with Adebayor, though, because when he is playing well, he does work really hard. He'll harry everything down and he'll just work the channels and just be all over the place, and it's just so clear and obvious when his heart's not in it.
I was talking to somebody yesterday about like Marlon Hayward, and why sorry to bring Newcastle in, but Marlon Hayward in particular. I haven't done it for a while, come on.
Yeah, fair enough.
But like when he fancies it, he's really, really good. He harries players, he knocks... people over and kind of creates a bit of a nuisance. Why wouldn't you do that for 90 minutes? You're in football, you've got the physique to do it. Yeah. Have a run around.
I think it's the least you expect.
I don't understand it.
I don't like it when they say, when the commentators or pundits or whatever say, oh yeah, and so-and-so's got an engine on him. You should have.
Yeah, he's got great work rate.
Yeah, everyone should have.
Flipping it.
Yeah, they should have.
Box to box, that's football.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I think some players it's more obvious than others. I mean, with Carlos Tevez, for example, his work rate is a real sort of standout positive thing about him. It's just naturally the style of his game. So Dimitar Berbatov obviously doesn't have that so much. But he's still a great player.
I know that, but all I'm saying is that his game would be a lot better if he did work that hard. And maybe he just can't be bothered, or maybe he physically hasn't got the attributes that people have got.
Interestingly, something Thierry Henry used to say, it was like a big part of his game, I'm sure still is that he would rest up front when the ball wasn't near him. He would... go out of his way to conserve his energy so he could sprint better when he got a chance.
But it
depends on your footballing brain, I suppose, isn't it? And just how you work as a player.
Yeah. I've never seen Berbatov sprint.
Not sure I've seen him run.
Yeah.
In my mind, he just walks around the pitch.
he is decent. He's quite... he reminds me of Cantona a little. He's a Cantona-esque Berbatov.
Yeah.
He's getting a lot of stick at the moment as well, which I think is really fair. He got a lot of assists last season.
Well, Manchester United have... getting a bit of stick. 3-0 against Fulham.
I think the ones over the road in Manchester are quite happy that Hughes went, because it kind of takes the heat off a little bit.
They've got an awful lot of injuries at the back, and Fulham did absolutely bombard.
Carrick and Fletcher were playing at the back for United.
They were awful, United. They were just shooting from all over the place and just getting no anything actual goal. Mm.
Paul Scholes got massively caught in possession first.
Danny Murphy scored again.
Against United. It's really out of character for Scholes, because if you look at the replay, he actually looked up and he saw everyone was around him. But he still got caught. Mm. It's almost like he wasn't concentrating.
Oh, that's a funny one. It was Zamora again.
There was a brilliant quote from Roy Hodgson about Bobby Zamora. I took the liberty of writing it down. Before Bobby gets seriously considered for an England call-up, he has a lot of work to do. But if Fabio Capello wants to look at him, he knows where he is. I will never push a player in the direction of the national team coach, but if he needs any information on Bobby, I'm happy to help out. I'm not going to sell you a sandwich, but would you like a sandwich?
Yeah. That's like the old Harry Redknapp. I would never talk about another team's players, but I like the boy. Yeah. I like the boy. He's a superb footballer. Everyone knows I like him.
We've mentioned this a few times about Roy. One minute he's saying he should, another minute he says he shouldn't.
He doesn't know
what
he's saying.
He did play bloody well, though.
Yeah, Roy Hodgson played brilliant.
And Zamora, I thought it was fantastic. Mate, I watched it last night.
Zamora's good with his chest. Mm.
Yeah.
Have you noticed that?
Yeah. Route one goal, his one, wasn't it? But it was very well executed.
Yeah.
That's exactly what they should be doing, though. If you're not playing against little defenders who are used to defending, and yeah, seriously, absolutely. They're not even defenders are playing two centre backs to them. So you've obviously got to do that. I think that's a shrewd move, Bobby. You're not going to play football around Man United. It's never going to happen.
Mm.
It was a great save from the Man U keeper when Zamora chested it to...
That was
Was that Gira?
Yeah.
Kuzak.
Kuzak, yeah, superb stuff. Liverpool, 0.
Come on!
But Portsmouth scored 2.
Get in there, I know, in one game. One in each half. Unbelievable,
Jeff. Very similar goals, weren't they? The defending on the first goal was absolutely abysmal. Who was it that headed it away?
It was a parry on it as well.
What about Belhadj's finish?
It was a great finish.
Oh, my
wrong
goodness.
Foot as well, right foot.
It's unbelievable stuff.
That game was all Pompey as well. I'm really, really pleased. I mean, I think, you know, it's probably still going to be a bridge too far for Portsmouth to escape relegation. They're going to be down there. I mean, it'll be a miracle if they don't get relegated. Mm. But it's a great result. And, you know, you've got to wonder, you've got to feel for Liverpool, really. I mean, how much longer can it go on for? I mean, it doesn't look like it's got any sort of... There's no sort of solution to the problem.
Well, Mascherano was sent off as well.
Yeah, and he looks like he's got a nasty
straight red as well, wasn't it?
It was Gerrard and Carragher. They just did not look interested. Torres as well just went completely missing. It's rare that happens.
No, do you reckon Gerrard could move on if this carries on?
Well, his body language, he just looks so frustrated, and it must be so annoying for Steven Gerrard. He wants to you know, win the league with Liverpool, but it just looks so far away from actually ever happening.
I think he wants to go to Pompey. And he does. I know that he was sort of, you could argue that he was spoiling for a move away, and he used it to get an improved contract and that sort of stuff. And it is all about him, I know that, and he likes to be the centre of attention. So I'm not sure if he really could be a success anywhere else, because he needs to be the person who's pulling the strings and stuff. And would he get on anywhere else? Would he be treated the same way he's treated at Liverpool? Of course he wouldn't. So he's sort of like he's made a rod for his own back, and he's stuck there. And if Liverpool don't win the league, then I don't think Steven Gerrard's going to win the league, because I can't see him going anywhere else.
I'd love to see him play in Europe somewhere.
That would be a solution, wouldn't it? Do you see Rafa Benitez's interview after the game? It's absolutely mental.
He started talking about the referee being good or something.
Yeah, perfect. But perfect. He said the word perfect about 10 times. It was really strange. Just really sort of petty sarcasm. He really looks like he's losing the plot. He looks like he just doesn't know what to do.
He's all over the place. He's all over the place, Rafa Benitez. You can see it in his face. He doesn't know what's going on. Like the Arsenal result was a poor result.
Was he looking a bit blotchy again?
The Pompey result, the Pompey result was a poor result. They've won 4-18 now or something. It's not good enough.
I tell you what, it's not as good a record as Birmingham City of late.
No.
Yeah.
They were doing wonderfully well.
Brilliantly.
Another good draw for them the weekend just gone.
That's right, away to Everton, yeah.
And they won 5 in a row before that.
It really is fantastic stuff. McLeish is doing a great job there so far.
Everton are struggling, actually, on the subject of them.
Oh, my goodness.
Surprisingly further down than you'd think.
I think they are.
So. Well, no, I assume I do. But Everton, you just sort of... It's like when Loro said, they'd be fine on Football Focus that time. You do expect them to be a team capable of sort of holding their own and doing well, but they're really, really struggling.
They've got no money, and they have injury problems as well.
Yeah.
So Moyes is almost doing a good job. I think they're overachieving. I think they're overachieving to a point where everyone's used to them overachieving.
Yeah,
remember when they had that season when they got in the Champions League place, and the next season they came like 17th?
Yeah. Well, that happened to them a couple of times, didn't it? Actually, someone at the Christmas drinks told me probably the strangest rumour I've ever heard, might be a flat-out lie, which was that Liverpool were going to try and get Luis Saha on loan in January. Like that would ever happen.
No, yeah, that's a strange one.
Dear. Maybe Michael Owen on loan.
Yeah.
Or not. Charlton 4, Millwall 4.
What a game.
A wonderful game.
Saturday when we had the old drinks was an amazing game day for football.
It was superb.
Goals all over the place.
But Charlton, actually, the highlights, it was just one of those great games where it just every time someone attacked, you thought it was going to be a goal.
Yeah.
And it inevitably was, you know. And right at the end, I think Charlton scored right towards the end, and they were going mental as if they'd won it. And then Millwall right in stoppage time. It was fantastic stuff.
That's what it's all about, isn't it?
It's exactly what it's about.
Yeah.
So, well done. Well done to them.
Yeah. Football's the winner there, Marcus, if you don't mind me saying.
Well, I do.
Yeah.
So, the Champions League draws happened.
Mm.
And Dybeck is going back to Old Trafford.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that.
Patrice Evra's looking forward to that. He's already been given it the big one.
Patrice Evra's a bit of an underrated mental one, isn't he?
Yep, yeah, I think so.
Just putting chicken breast fillets in his boots and saying scared of
Hello,
green and stuff.
You're going to have to explain that to me.
He used to put chicken breast. I don't think he still does it. I'm not sure if your lads do it now, but he used to put chicken breast fillets, raw ones, in his boots to make him more comfortable.
Did the colonel tell him to do
and
that?
And he said at the end of the game that when he took them out, they were sort of partially cooked. The chicken breast.
Absolutely. But why would he want that?
Well, I don't know. I don't know why he's done it.
It's just like, just to immediately have a snack after coming off.
What about, is this like, oh, and so they take less in the oven?
No, I don't know. I don't know how he carried on eating them. But
grotesque amounts of salmonella corset in my veins. Powered by salmonella.
Do you remember when he came out and said that he's really superstitious of the colour green now after they played Ireland? He said he can't stop thinking about Ireland whenever he sees the colour green and it's making him feel sick and stuff.
My giddy old. Yeah. Well, anyway, I hope.
He's nuts.
He's also said that after football he wants to start like a comedy duo of Ji Sung Park. Could you imagine that?
Oh yeah, because they're mates, aren't they?
Yeah, those two and Tevez are big mates, aren't they? Yeah.
Well. Yes.
There's a little YouTube clip of them, like a sitcom clip of them, when they present someone, and they present Tevez with a birthday cake.
Yeah. But I don't think they can all speak the same language. How the hell do they communicate?
They don't share a common language. It's only English, and Tevez can't speak English.
He speaks a little.
Yeah, he can hardly speak Spanish, as someone said to us once.
That's right, yeah. So Milan, Manchester United is an interesting one. Mm. Who do you fancy for that one?
United, I'd say.
Yeah. You think so?
Well, they get the players, actually.
Should I tell you? Yeah,
it's not quite February, different.
Well, I mean, mid-Feb, yeah, is when they're. And then Porto, Arsenal.
Good result for Arsenal. Arsenal always get a sort of decent
good draw for
in
Arsenal.
Round,
they're not yeah,
but,
yet.
I mean, it just means we'll get spanked by an English team later on. It's what always happens.
Yeah. I think Arsenal, dark horses. I think
that's quite a good one because Porto a good passing side as well. Plays some nice stuff, but they just lack that little bit of quality sometimes. Apart from obviously the time when Jose was managing them and they won.
Yeah, well, of course. Yeah, I saw Arsenal play Porto in the Champions League last year.
That's right,
the Emirates and.
4-0, wasn't it?
Yeah, Arsenal were much better. I mean, it's, obviously the group game is a little bit different and obviously it's a season ago, but you can't see too much change. I fancy Arsenal for that.
They just seem to be getting on with it, don't they, Arsenal?
Slipped under the radar, they have. Massively, yeah.
Karim Benzema is going back to Lyon with Real Madrid.
Yeah.
Interesting one. Lyon are always a good side in the Champions
League.
Yeah,
I'd really love to see them win it one day.
Yeah, I'd love to see them go further than the quarterfinals.
They're currently about 7th or 8th in their league, aren't they? They're really, really having a rough time.
That's a funny one. And of course, Inter against Chelsea.
Yeah, that's the one.
Jose's playing it. He's down playing it.
Of course, he is. He's always doing that because he knows that Inter can't do anything in Europe. So he's saying stuff like, "Do you remember after the Barca game, he was saying, I'm bored, I'm somewhere else."
I love it.
You're bored because you can't do anything. You know?
Well, recently he's come out and said he didn't hit a journalist. You'll be pleased to know.
That's good.
He said he has to let us know.
He has to say every hour on the hour. He has to come out and say.
They say that I didn't hit a journalist, and anyone that says I did is a massive liar and a super massive prick.
Well, he said that he said he was involved in a verbal exchange with a journalist, but denied any physical contact. And he said, "I don't."
I remember this.
He said, "I don't like this." Was about.
Did he say he's going to buy him a Christmas present?
He said, "I don't like to have journalists near the team bus after a game, not knowing that this journalist had been authorised by one of my colleagues, and seeing him in an area where only the Inter channel is allowed to work. I came out of the bus and I insulted him twice."
Twice.
I love that how he stopped, eased up. And then back in.
Bonus insult.
He said recently that, I'm not sure it was the same incident, but he said something and he said there was an altercation between him and a journalist. And at the end he just went, "And I expect a Christmas card from him." I wouldn't be surprised if he got into more than one altercation this week.
So I really, really hope that a massive incident kicks off of him and anyone involved at Chelsea.
Could be super. You can imagine him doing the old knee slide if they score.
Oh, God, yeah.
But he does love Chelsea. He really does.
Yeah.
So I think he'd probably be a bit too respectful.
Yeah, but you can imagine him giving all that to the old keep your chin up to Abramovich.
Maybe Abramovich, yeah. But do you remember when he was in charge at Chelsea and Porto went there and he went over and he sat... like on the by the front row of the Porto fans was just having a chat to some of them.
Was he?
Yeah, so I think he's all right.
I miss him.
Yeah, we all miss him.
I reckon he could maybe end up at City one day, you know?
No, because he wants to go to United. He wants to go to United.
Okay.
If you read between the lines with him, whenever Ferguson or Mourinho are quoted on that issue, Ferguson always compliments Mourinho.
Oh, does he?
Mourinho always compliments Ferguson at Man United. He always calls Ferguson the gaffer, doesn't he?
That's right, yeah. Well, just to complete the Champions League draw, we've got CSKA Moscow versus Sevilla, Bayern Munich v Fiorentina.
That's a good game.
Yeah. I think Fiorentina are doing pretty well, actually.
Luca Toni.
Link there, Olympiacos v Bordeaux and Stuttgart-Barcelona.
Oh, Barcelona would be happy with that.
Christian Gross is actually managing City.
Jens Lehmann might have his work cut out on that.
Oh, yeah, he probably will be busy.
Hey, we're seeing Bale in the big... Well, he's obviously
no
playing,
time to take a piss off the other side of the pitch against Barcelona.
Well, absolutely. But Jens has been involved in a couple of things recently, as you say. A lot of people said that to us at the drinks. You know, he didn't mention him taking a piss off the side of the pitch. Yeah. We thought, there'll be something else coming along. Yeah, so we'll mention it with that, and of course...
Give it the Jens Lehmann ramble. We could do the entire show just...
Well, Jens has delivered. He's been given a three-match ban after a late... red card the other week. He stamped on Aristide Bantz's foot to give away an 86th minute penalty, which was scored and denied Stuttgart their first win in 9 league games.
Do you know that
well, he lashed out at Bantz in revenge for an earlier foul, apparently, and he was shown a red card by the referee, and he left the stadium in rage and confronted a fan outside the ground, and television cameras showed Lehmann. He pulled a fan's glasses off his face and refused to give him them back until the fan pleaded for their return. And then after leaving the ground, he called for a taxi before then deciding to get on the team bus. I mean, he didn't remain on the team bus very long because he had a change of heart and took a taxi to Frankfurt Airport before catching a flight home to Munich.
helicopter.
The last week he refused to pay a club fine of €40,000 after a separate incident when he criticised Stuttgart officials for sacking Marcus Babbel. So there you go. There was 3-1 there.
Did you hear what the fan actually said to him?
What was that?
It's amazing. Apparently he said, "Why can't you just be normal?"
Good point, well made.
Yeah.
He's a 40-year-old man.
Yeah.
I mean,
this reminds
he's
of the
a
other.
Father.
My favourite, I forgot to mention this ages ago, that you know Oliver Kahn, he's obviously retired
of course,
now.
Yeah. But he was a bit mental.
There's this crazy incident that somehow slipped under the radar of the Ramble. I don't know how, but it was a while ago.
The Ramble radar?
Unbelievable. Yeah, it was when Kahn... must have been down for maintenance. And Oliver Kahn was playing for Bayern Munich, and he went up... correct me if I'm wrong, if anyone knows any better, but I'm pretty sure he went up for a highball, and there's a clash of heads, and he was momentarily dazed. And on his back on the floor, and Sami Kaufour, you know, the
Ghanaian, internet,
he ran up to him and thought he was like dead, just started to give him like mouth to mouth. And Oliver Kahn was just like, "Get off me, what are you doing?"
Okay.
And then Sami Kaufour was just like, "Oh, sorry, I'll just try to save your life."
Well, he did.
I'm not dead.
So, Jens will be coming up against Barcelona in the Champions League. And Barcelona beat Estudiantes of Argentina to win the World Club Cup.
Did you see the winning goal?
Oh, Messi.
Messi scored it with his chest. It was like Superman. It was
Well, they went 1-0 down Barcelona in I think the fourth minute early on, and they bombarded them. And it was quite an end-to-end game by all accounts. I didn't see it, but eventually they equalised. Pedro in the 89th minute with a nice little
good
header.
Good player.
Yeah. And they really wanted to win Barcelona, because often in these World Club Cup games, the European sides kind of just don't look that bothered. But they really wanted to win. And then Messi scored in the 110th minute in extra
time. That's 6 trophies in this calendar year for Barcelona.
I don't think they'd ever won this one, and Laporta really wanted it.
Do you want an Andy Burton update? My mate James Pritchett played for Auckland City, and they came 5th in the World Club Cup.
Oh, relevant. Yeah, I was wondering where you're going with that.
No, he plays for Auckland City. He's right back for them, and they came 5th overall.
Was that who became 6th? Would that be the...
I don't know, but
the big
teams don't come into the semis, do they? So
they
Auckland have already been knocked out by then, so they didn't play anyone big.
Oh, okay, right.
I've seen that he's got a little plaque saying fifth. I presume it says fifth best team in the world. That's obviously not true, but he's dining out on it from what I can make out.
Let him.
He's earned it.
I was enjoying the Real match at 3 o'clock in the morning last night. They repeated it. You guys watched it live, didn't you?
6-0.
Yeah.
6-0.
Absolute hammering, wasn't it? Higuain again. The second goal we scored was just superb.
Couple of fantastic goals, wasn't it?
Funny, the morning after the Real Madrid drinks, I phoned you, James, and I said, "Did you see the Real Madrid game?" And you went, "Yeah, what was it? 1-0? No, James, it was 6-0. I think it was the third or fourth goal that the Higuain scored at Real Madrid's fourth. I made you watch it because it was such a peach.
I was shouting across the pub to you, Higuain. You were like, yeah, Higuain.
I like that we've sort of like claimed ownership of Gonzalo Higuain, as if he's good because we've touted him.
Yeah.
But it's weird with him though, because apparently he's not actually that popular with the Madrid sort of owners and sort of crazy people running the club, because he's very direct and he's not a huge Galactico, although he's like becoming one more and more every week. It's really weird. He might even get shipped out of there.
We'll have him for the Ramble too. I'll change my game and play off him.
No, I don't think we can play you and him, mate. So I think you're going to have to sit on the bench.
Yeah.
Hang on a minute.
You heard me.
Are you going to be starting?
Of course I am.
Well, how am I going to be on the bench then?
Well, club captain. So
club captain.
He washes the shirts.
You'll have a mutiny in your own.
Self-appointed, admittedly. Still club captain.
Oh dear. Well, let's get move away from people who make ridiculous decisions. Seth Blatter.
Hey. Every time.
He's on fire. Yeah. Somebody didn't have a drink last night.
Yeah.
Sepp has said no to replays.
Okay.
So we're not having them.
Yeah,
all that debate, all that debacle. So this France v Ireland, no.
Why
does
he respond to things like about a month or 6 weeks after they happen? Why not?
I believe it's glacier-like speed, James.
Well, he said that we slag him off, right? And this is why, because he says things like this. Referees shall remain human. All right.
No robot referees.
No animal bird referees swooping around the fields.
Messing it up, looking for seeds and worms.
And we will not have monitors to stop the game to see if we are right or wrong.
I'm thinking of monitors, the lizards now.
Yeah,
all monitors. No running, Ronaldo.
Blatter said, please don't insist on this theme. All right, that's it. His end. He's gone. I said no.
It's a series of words.
He said there will be no more discussion between fans, and then no more hope, and then no more life.
It's like he's trying to fit it into 140 characters on Twitter. Yeah. they're just statements.
Yeah. Dear, oh dear.
So what he's saying is that if we bring in replays, then there'll be no more discussions between fans about the big decisions, and then there'll be no more hope for some reason, and then no more life.
Well, you're the president of FIFA, and you actually need someone to sort of translate what you're saying, like, more than once. It's a bit of a communication breakdown in my opinion. What's Jack Warner saying about it? Give me some money.
Jack, do you want to charge us £1 million per word so they didn't ask us in
Seth
comment?
Blatter says there will be no replays, and Jack Warner probably says there will not be any replays unless you pay me a lot of money. then there'll be replays.
There will be no monitors on my bank account.
Yes!
Now, chaps, do you remember the Englishman Kenny Pavey who plays in Sweden?
Yes.
Of course.
Who scored for AIK. He plays for AIK and he scored and he came on and went mental at that time.
There's only one Kenny Pavey.
We talked about him a few shows ago.
Yeah.
Well, I think there's someone on the phone. Who's there?
Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas. It's Kenny Pavey.
Hey! Kenny Pavey.
Sweden, England legend, Kenny Pavey.
England and Sweden's Kenny Pavey. Kenny, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. How are you?
Yeah, not bad. Thanks for having me.
Are you back in England for Christmas?
No, I'm in Sweden at the moment, so good luck on your phone bill.
Kenny, we've got to ask you, how come you went abroad to play in Sweden? What was the reasons behind that?
I don't think I was good enough to play in England, was I?
That's not true.
Nah. Well, I actually was really close to signing for Aston Villa. I played for Sittingbourne Non-League and come really close to signing for them, and the geezer that scouted me, I had a contact in Sweden who also was a scout for Aston Villa, but working in Sweden, and that's basically how I got out there.
Why do you think other players don't do it?
I don't know. I think more and more people are doing it. We've had quite a few lads in Sweden now, a couple of English lads that have started to come over, and that James King, he played in Portsmouth, and he's been out here for a while. We've got a couple of other players in a couple of other clubs, and I know a lot of like Teddy Sheringham come out here a few years back.
Oh, did he?
Vinnie Jones was out here. Wisey was out here. Even Peter Crouch played, I think, in like the third division out here or something. So we've had quite a few people have come out here for, like, most of the time it's for experience, but sometimes, people stay, like myself,
Was it an easy decision to go out there?
Nah, mate, it was, I think it was really hard. To be honest with you, in the beginning when I got the opportunity, I didn't realise which country it was. I just had a geezer on the phone and said, look, are you interested in playing abroad? And I thought, I'll just get my suitcase packed ready for, like, Spain or Italy, somewhere like that, somewhere warm. But, I had to get my thermals out and go to Sweden instead, so... But, it was difficult. I was only 18 and, I'd never lived away from my mum and dad, and I had to leave all my mates and that. And it weren't the biggest town in the world I was going to either. It was a little village, population of about 7,000. So it was difficult, but you know, they helped me out a lot, and it was a great experience.
Kenny, it's Lukey here. It's good to talk to you, mate.
Hello, Luke.
I've got to say, we all saw your when you came off the bench and scored that goal. Was it against the rivals? Was it to win the league, I think?
Yeah, well, it was the third game from the end. It was a local derby, and I was a bit gutted. I was getting splinters on the bench, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I'd just come back from injury.
Call you the judge.
And he threw me on, and I scored. It was a game we had to win, really. And
you were quite pleased, weren't you?
I lost my head, to be honest. I went a little bit radio rental, and
you didn't get a booking, though.
No, I think he was too shocked.
Or is he too scared, maybe? Did you cut your hands on the fence?
Yeah. When I was listening to the show and you were describing it, I started blushing and everything. I thought, what a wally, you know?
That's like, superb, you know, mate.
I didn't take my shirt off. It was too cold to take my shirt off.
Yeah.
But I did jump out and the fence, you know, and I cut my head, and there was a bit of claret everywhere, and they done the old Terry Butcher thing in the paper. It was only my hands, you know. Terry had half his head hanging off.
Yeah. Kenny, you.
Still, it was a good experience, and we went on to win the league from it. So.
Superb. Kenny, we saw you in, was it a magazine? You were sticking both middle fingers up.
Yeah, that was actually the national newspaper.
The national, yeah, well, you've got to go national with that type of thing, haven't you?
Yeah, getting all busy, yeah. No, I got voted the dirtiest player in the league. And
is that fair?
They come to the training ground and said, look, what do you think about, you know, being voted the worst player in the league? And I said, all this blah, blah, blah. I'd only had four yellow cards and one red. But for some reason, like, obviously I've got this reputation, and to be fair, the red card was quite naughty. I don't know if you've seen it on YouTube, but like, I think it was.
Talk us through it, Kenny. What did you do?
It was against Gothenburg, and it was the last minute, and we were winning 1-0, and we'd already had a man sent off, so it was already down to 10 men, and they were putting us under a bit of cosh at our end, and. Yeah, I thought I could make the tackle, and I got there a little bit late, about 2 days too late. As he's, I think he seen me at the corner of his eye, so he turned his back on me, and I was running full pelt, and he ended up doing like a triple somersault in the air and landed on his neck, and it just did really good, to be honest with you.
If you're going to get sent off, you may as well make it
spectacular. Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you're going to go properly, you know? So.
Are you looking forward to hopefully getting into the main Champions League draw next season?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, I can't really believe it. You know, even to a few years back, I was playing in this Young Sheely team. It was like where I started at, and playing Division 2, you know. And now I'm going to be, you know, competing to play in the biggest club competition in the world. It's really surreal. And I played UEFA Cup and come really close with Icor. We went travelling to Northern Ireland and Latvia, and we ended up finishing in Israel, and it was really unlucky not to beat Tel Aviv, you know, to go to the group stage where we would have met Tottenham.
Oh, that would have been brilliant.
And, that would have been blinding, yeah. And so, I mean, to have this opportunity, especially at my age, you know, I'm not the youngest bloke in the world, so it's just a dream come true, really. And hopefully, it'll be a good tale for the end of my career, you know.
Kenny, who would you like to see inducted into the Dean Windass Hall of Fame?
Easily, I would love to put my favourite player Teddy Sheringham in there.
Teddy Sheringham,
yeah. And I was actually out with Jimmy Bullard the other day, actually.
Oh, really? Yeah.
I can't imagine what a night out with Kenny Pavey and Jimmy Bullard like. Probably has a bloodied hands, I imagine.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for talking to us, Kenny.
Yeah, no problem, mate. No problem.
Yeah, have a good one,
yeah,
mate.
You too, lad.
Thank you so much.
Thanks
bye.
Again. Ta-la, bye.
Cheers, mate. Bye.
Email.
Yeah. There's only one this week.
Well, we did one at the start, but we're going to do another one now.
Mixing it up.
Mixing it up.
Take it away.
I've got it in my hand. This is from Max from Bradford on Avon. Hello, Ramble Buds. I feel I need to bring to your attention the maddest footballer ever, Lars Elstrup.
That is a big shout, isn't it? Maddest footballer ever.
He was a Danish international who played for Luton. After retiring, he became a religious revolutionary and changed his name to Durando, the river that flows in the sea.
What?
He joined a commune set up by Englishman Michael Barnett and his Wild Goose Company in Denmark. No idea. No idea. However, he left after being denied the right to see his pet Dachshund.
That's not true. This has been made up.
In 2000, he was spotted in the middle of the busiest pedestrian shopping street in Copenhagen, circled by a rope, waving his penis at passers-by.
Oh, good stuff.
His explanation was, in some respects, I do this to provoke people.
In some respects.
I like experiencing people's reactions. Some people say sod off, others take it as an offer of sex.
I bet they don't.
I bet they
don't. In his mind.
When he did it in the city of Odense, he was heckled, he lost his temper.
I haven't read this bit.
He dick-slapped a school child.
He
wrestled a police officer and was eventually arrested. With good cause, I think, probably.
Eventually
I don't know.
Arrested.
9 months on, he turned up to play football with enemy and lauded journalists. He scored 5 goals in his underpants, telling teammates to drink more water. Yellow piss is for losers. After the match, he was asked if he fancied a pint. No, he replied, I want pussy. And, and then he walked away, never to be seen again. Best player ever. Yeah. Thank you very much, Max from Bradford-on-Avon.
He sounds even more mental than Carlos Roa. Yeah. That's great.
It's like a mental special today. Yeah. Mad Jens has been in there, this fella, Robin Friday. We've actually spoken to Kenny Pavey.
Yeah. Well, I take it then, the big man from Bradford upon Avon is getting the champ manager goodie bag.
Well, of course he is. So.
That's a superb effort, to be fair. Yeah. That blew every other email out the water. There was no point doing another one.
Lars Elstrup. What a...
Let's get him on for next week.
What a horrible man.
Someone find him, whatever cave he's living in now, get him a phone and get him on the show.
And let him see his dog, whatever you do.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, Max, the championship manager goodie bag will be on its way to you. That must mean it's profile time.
Stand to attention.
Woo woo!
Yeah.
It's a good one.
We haven't done it yet.
No. Oh. I'm sorry. I just read through. This man has recently. People have been recently celebrating the 50 years anniversary of this man joining Liverpool. And he's, of course, William Bill Shankly.
Oh, eh? Mm. A true giant of the game.
Massive.
I wonder what he'd think of Liverpool's mayor.
Yeah, exactly.
So here we go. Bill Shankly, born 2nd of September 1913.
Winner, straight away.
Yeah, 54 years before Sunderland.
Good.
Yeah.
he was, of course, one of Britain's most successful and respected football managers. He was born in Ayrshire, in the village of Glenbuck.
Yeah.
And football was quite simply a way of getting away from the mineshafts.
Yeah, yeah, I can imagine.
Very, very tough.
They chase you about up there, those mineshafts.
Very, very tough upbringing, of course, he had. But he started playing for local side Cromberry, Ellington and Glenbuck Cherry Pickers.
Oh, really? That's a great name.
Why don't they exist anymore?
America. It sounds like a Nazzle team.
So he played for them. There's no definitive records for this team, unfortunately, but legend has it that Cromberry were unbeaten at home for 10 years between 1904 and 1914.
They sound like they etched their records into a tree anyway.
Yeah. I can imagine playing them would have been tough.
And this was partly due to, legend has it, partly due to home fans letting the opposition keeper know what his fate would be if he didn't let a few goals
in. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Sort of what they do at Fratton Park now.
Well, yeah, it doesn't tend to work.
No.
Although it did last weekend. So Shankly started playing for them and his appearances caught the eye of bigger teams and he signed for Carlisle United. He said it was a stepping stone, really, after he left there, of course.
Yeah.
And a year later, he signed for Preston North End. He won the FA Cup in 1938 with them. But because of the Second World War, it took away a number of his playing years.
Mm.
He also won 5 caps for Scotland. It's also good to point out. So he played for Preston until he retired in March 1949. And in the same month, was appointed manager at Carlisle United.
Oh, right.
Now, he was a good player.
Yeah.
You know, won the FA Cup, of course, but we all know him, really,
as a manager.
He made a quick impression on the local population in Carlisle United, and he urged them to come and support the team, and he said, you know, this team's carrying the hopes of the region to the rest of the country. And he established his relationship with the fans in his very own unique way. He said, I used to get on the tannoy at 2:45 to speak to the people every other week before the game. Instead of putting something in the programme, I spoke to them, explaining if we'd changed the team, how it had played in the last game. Everything, the supporters loved it. They lapped it up.
That's great stuff,
isn't
it?
Wow. He dragged the club into a more professional outlook. He provided a new strip for the first team. You know, little changes like this. He got the board to purchase a large house, which was converted into flats for new players coming into the club. Wow. And in the first full season, in 1949-1950, Carlisle finished ninth. And he'd won over the people of the town with their brand of football. And season ticket sales for the start of the 50-51 season were an all-time high. They finished third in that season, which wasn't quite good enough for promotion, and he had a bit of a squabble with the board because they were they didn't give him the bonus that they promised him if they finished in the top three. And after a little bit of an argument, he resigned and he took up an offer from Grimsby Town.
Oh, right, yeah. I'm pretty sure he interviewed for the Liverpool job as well, but I think the first time he got turned down.
Is that right?
And then he went to Grimsby. I think I'm right in saying that.
Okay, well, he arrived at Grimsby and the club was in freefall, having dropped from Division 1 to Division 3. And the morale of the players and the supporters was very low. But he quickly became a cult figure at Grimsby, and the team were regularly drawing in crowds in excess of 20,000. And he used to turn out for the reserve team.
Oh, nice.
Because he still fancies himself a bit of a player. And this would draw huge crowds as well. You know, 5,000 fans watching the reserves wouldn't be unheard of. In the 51-52 season, Grimsby just missed out on promotion. But this was despite picking up an incredible 36 points out of a possible 40 in the last 20 matches.
Wow.
An immediate impact. Mm. Didn't mess around.
Mm. That was when it was 2 points for a win, obviously.
That's right, yeah. Mm. The 52-53 season started, and everyone, you know, a lot of optimism around the club. But the squad was an ageing one, and after a bright start, the sort of season fizzled out, and Shankly was given no money. He wasn't supported by the board, and he was quite sort of disillusioned by it all, and he quit in January 54, said there was a lack of ambition from the chairman and the club. But he did say in his autobiography, he said, "That Grimsby team, pound for pound and class for class, were the best football team I have seen in England since the war."
Oh, really?
"In the league they were in, they played football nobody else could play. Everything was measured, planned and perfected, and you could not wish to see more entertaining football."
God, it's high praise indeed, yeah.
Well, absolutely, yeah. Mm. He had a brief spell at Workington, where he got them out of trouble, and then he took a job at Huddersfield. And during his time in Huddersfield, he he really liked to get involved with the locals and all. He was very much a socialist man, very much one of the people, very working class.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
And used to get snuck in. And he took part in a kickabout every Sunday with the locals on a field near Crossland Road, near where he was living. And he would play whatever the weather and would go in as hard on a 10-year-old boy as he would on a fully grown man. Never holding back or altering his style for anybody. Treated everybody the same.
Like, yeah. Lars Elstrup.
could you imagine Rafa Benitez doing that?
Not really.
Again, he became frustrated by the lack of ambition showed by the board, and they were constantly urging him to sell the best players and at the same time failing to bring in, you know, or suggest possible replacements. So when Liverpool came knocking in 1959 and offered him the job, after 13 years of management at quite a low level, Shankly, he said, "Thank you very much." He'd found a club that shared his own ambitions about the game and were prepared to give him full backing to achieve them.
Yeah, it's worth remembering sort of when Shankly went to Liverpool. Liverpool were nowhere near the club like they are now. Yeah,
absolutely.
They were in the second division, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. Mm. They're a national institution now, and everyone sort of thinks of them as always being.
That's right.
They're thereabouts. It wasn't the case before Shankly came along.
It's similar to Herbert Chapman in that he was a real innovator with things.
Yeah. Very much so, yeah. Well, he said just before he took over at Liverpool, he said, I'm going to a place where they live, eat, sleep and drink football, and that's my place.
Yeah, yeah.
He really felt, it was funny, when he joined Liverpool, I think with the other sides, he kind of saw their potential and thought, yeah, if I go in there, you know, I've got to try and get the locals behind me, we've got to try this, and then maybe we can do this.
Yeah.
It was almost as if him and Liverpool were ready for each other.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
You know, he was kind of like, well, this is it, it needs me to come in, and we're off.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, the final piece of the puzzle sort of thing.
Exactly, yeah. So in 1959, he started at Liverpool. And as you say, they were in the second division. They were going nowhere. Mm. The training ground was a shambles. Anfield wasn't particularly nice ground to go to. They were, had a lot of average players. It just was such a far cry
from what it's done,
from
yeah.
the from the history. I mean, you look back at the history of the club, and it is a wonderful history. Mm. And he really got things going there. Mm. He felt immediately at home. He sensed, you know, a real kinship with the supporters. And of course, he had the a great backroom staff, the Bootroom Boys, Bob Paisley and Joe Fagan.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said that he got rid of all the deadwood at the start. He said, within a month, I'd put down 24 names of players I thought should go, and they went inside of a year.
Mm.
He brought in Ron Yates, Ian St John, and Gordon Milne, and promotion was gained back into the First Division in 61 and 62. Everton were the big side in Liverpool at the time.
Yeah.
But in 1963-64, Liverpool clinched their sixth title from the former champions, Everton.
Yeah.
And he famously said, if Everton were playing at the bottom of the garden, I'd pull the curtains.
Yeah, he said a lot of things about Everton, didn't he?
But he did.
I've also read that he sort of did that to keep up the sort of... because he thought it's something he should be saying, that he should really be doing it to get the fans on side and to show himself as a real Liverpool man. But apparently he used to live not far from Everton's training ground. I'm not sure, probably just after he retired. And he was always welcome there, apparently. He used to go down there and watch him train quite a lot, and they're always really pretty nice to him, and he was nice to them as well. I think it was more of a sort of act he used to put on.
Yeah. Oh, very much so. Well, they won the FA Cup in 1965 and won the title again in 65-66. They lost the final of the Cup Winners' Cup to Borussia Dortmund, though. But that was kind of like the team of the 60s, because the team of the 60s, team of the 70s.
Yeah.
Very different eras under Shankly. And in the 70s, he brought in some new faces. Kevin Keegan, Larry Lloyd and Ray Clements, amongst others.
Yeah, Keegan was a bit of a player.
Absolutely.
It's easy to forget that, because Keegan's a bit of an awkward man.
Yeah.
He's actually a superb player, you know, brilliant footballer.
He was the European Player of the Year, wasn't he, at one
point? Twice,
I think. Incredible player. Yeah.
The best bicycle kick I ever saw scored was from him, and it was disallowed. The goal was disallowed for, like, offside or something, but it was just a beautiful bicycle kick from the edge of the area.
He's a brilliant footballer. Unbelievable.
Well, Shankly told Kevin Keegan when Liverpool were playing West Ham United... He said before the game, he said, son, I've just seen that Bobby Moore. What a wreck. He's got bags under his eyes. He's limping. He's got dandruff, and it looks as though he's been to a nightclub yet again. During the game, Bobby Moore played an absolute blinder. Yeah. And Keegan did score, but Bobby Moore played an absolute blinder. And then after the game, Shankly said to Keegan, oh, he's a proper player, that Bobby Moore, isn't he? You'll never play against anyone better than him.
My favourite Shankly quote is, and I hope I'm not ruining the one you're going to say, is that when, I think it was Tommy Smith came into his office and said, oh, Gaffer, I don't think, to Shankly, he says, Gaffer, I don't think I'm playing on Saturday. He says, oh, well, what's wrong with you? He goes, oh, it's my knee. And he goes, whoa, hang on a minute. It's not your knee. It's Liverpool's knee.
Yeah, yeah. That's a great one.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant. Oh, some of his quotes, you know, were absolutely superb. Again, you know, we talked about him being a real man of the people, and he hated all the bureaucracy of football and all that. I mean, he just wouldn't... Nowadays, he would... Oh, my goodness.
He'd be furious constantly. Yeah.
Well, he said, at a football club, there's a holy trinity. The players, the manager and the supporters. Directors don't come into it. They are only there to sign the cheques.
A bit like Brian Clough then, really.
Exactly. Yeah. Clough, very much so. Yeah. Very much so, yeah. In 1973, Liverpool won the league and the UEFA Cup. And in 1974, they won the FA Cup, which was, of course, his last piece of silverware, because he retired in July 1974, much to everybody's amazement.
Mm.
He was 60 then, and he decided to retire. He said going to tell the chairman of his decision was like facing the electric chair. Mm. But he wanted to spend time with his family, and I think he wanted to go out on a high. And they'd won the FA Cup, and he'd achieved unbelievable stuff there. However, when the news of his resignation first emerged, the fans just went mental. They couldn't understand it, and local factory workers threatened to go on strike. And just the whole thing just went off, really.
Very similar to when Tony Adams left Pompey, actually. Similar reaction, yeah.
Well, the club was left in capable hands with the Bootroom staff.
Paisley was...
Paisley there. There was that, the Bootroom Club, was it, after the game?
Well, the opposition's manager used to be invited into the room, and they used to chat about football, and the only after each game, and the only conditions where you weren't allowed to talk about the game that had just happened. You could talk about anything else, but not the game that just
That's
happened.
Right, yeah. It was quite legendary, that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind to hear some of those conversations, yeah. Though, Pete.
To have been a fly on the wall there, Marcus, eh?
Unfortunately, you know, when he left Liverpool, he got a little bit of stick, and some of the fans weren't happy with him at all. And he said later, it's quite sad really, he said, I might add that I count Everton amongst the clubs who have welcomed me over the last few seasons. I've been received more warmly by Everton than I have by Liverpool. It's scandalous and outrageous that I should have to write these things about the club I helped to build into what it is today, because if the situation had been reversed, I would have invited people to the games.
Mm.
Yeah.
Didn't, shame,
he,
really.
Didn't he famously like buy tickets for fans and stuff like that? I read that he did, to, like, yeah, actually phone fans up sometimes, yeah, and chat about the games when they sent him letters.
Well, he was incredible. He knew how important the fans were for a successful team
and how much, yeah, it meant to them as well.
Exactly, and it's just nowadays it's so
can
refreshing.
You imagine?
Oh my! Yeah. But it's just so refreshing to hear about this kind of thing.
Hello,
you know?
Is that John? This is Gianfranco Zola. I'm sorry we didn't win again. It wouldn't happen, would it?
Well, it was the one particular example where he did buy a fan a ticket was the 1976 UEFA Cup final, second leg in Bruges, I think it was, and a fan came over and said he didn't have a ticket, so Bill Shankly went and bought him one. He was awarded the OBE.
So he could have bought a ticket, presumably.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't have a ticket.
In '76, Shankly wasn't even manager then, so he's just basically done a favour for him.
Exactly, yeah, yeah, yeah. So he was awarded the OBE in 1974, and he continued to live in the house that he and his wife had bought when they first moved to Liverpool. And he was a regular in and around the city and was happy to chat away to everybody about football and one thing and another. Sadly, in 1981, in September 81, he died, age 68, but of course his legacy will never ever be forgotten. And we talked earlier about some of the quotes. I mean, he said, a football team is like a piano. You need 8 men to carry it and 3 who can play the damn thing. And there was a great one where he said, a lot of football success is in the mind. You must believe that you are the best and then make sure that you are. In my time at Liverpool, we always said we had the best 2 teams in Merseyside, Liverpool and Liverpool Reserves.
Good stuff. So it's fair to say then, although like, Shankly didn't win as much as sort of Paisley did, there's no way Paisley would have been able to achieve what he achieved.
No, absolutely
the foundations
not.
Being
no
set
way.
By Shankly, because I read it like the training at Liverpool's training ground when Shankly first took over, and they just had one tap for water. That's all they had.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
He got all that sorted out, and he said that he changed it so that they all went to Anfield before training, and they all travelled to training together to build the camaraderie
right,
yeah. up and stuff.
They'd all have a meal together as well.
That's right.
And that
he's
way
you
could sort of control their diets as well, which
a
is really, pioneer. Really modern.
Yeah, yeah. For the time. He really is. I mean, there's the Shankly Gates at Anfield now, isn't there, where named after him. He really did. Must have set the... sort of set the stall out for everything they could have achieved after him.
Absolutely, and I'll end by saying the famous quote where he said that I've been basically honest in a game in which it is sometimes difficult to be honest. Sometimes you've got to tell a little white lie to get over a little troublesome period of time. I'd like to think that I've put more into the game than I've taken out and that I haven't cheated anybody and that I've been working for people honestly all along the line. For the people of Liverpool who go to Anfield, I'd like to be recognised for trying to give them entertainment. I was interested in only one thing, success for the club, and that meant success for the people. I wanted results for the club, for the love of the game, to make the people happy.
Bill Shankly.
Bill Shankly, come on in.
You come welcome.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is the end of the Christmas special.
Very, very special. Very Christmassy and very special as well. Loads of stuff going on.
Loads of Christmassy things.
Can't move. Yeah, it's a brilliant special edition, that.
We're wearing nothing but tinsel.
It's lucky it's free.
Hey, don't worry, lads. I got these.
Eating tinsel.
There you are.
You're like, it's Santa.
You see?
Jingle bells.
You don't get them in any bloody other show, do you?
No, you don't, actually. Well, we don't know that. But
probably
we...
get loads of shows with bells in over Christmas, probably. Yeah, but this is the best one.
Yeah.
Bell ends. Didn't buy them. I just found them. Unnecessary.
Yeah.
Notices, I guess. I mean, the Christmas drinks are over. We don't have to talk about that blabbering crap anymore.
I was having like Vietnam War style flashbacks. Like,
you kept texting me on the week leading up to, well, what if nobody comes, Pete? Oh, no. And I must admit, anybody who read the Facebook page regarding the Christmas drinks, I was enjoying the fact that Luke wrote, we won't be doing a ramble, but we won't be answering, and we definitely won't be answering any footballing questions. I can just imagine you on stage, an evening with Luke Moore, talking about your career in football.
Yeah,
what was
mentioned.
It like scoring the winning goal at Liverpool?
Yeah, it has been suggested, Pete. You know.
But betway.com/football ramble still up for all your Boxing Day and early New Year fixtures, I guess.
Yeah.
When are we putting the show out next week? I think this is Wednesday night.
Yeah,
it would, normal.
Yeah, it's 30th.
Thursday morning.
Yeah, 30,
why not?
31st.
Why not?
Lovely.
Marvellous. Well, say goodbye, Pete.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Luke.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, James.
Bye.
A Merry Christmas. We're all off on the piss with Kenny Pavey and Jimmy Bullard.
Merry Christmas.
You've broken.
Merry Christmas!
You've broken, now.
Bells have broken.
It's unbelievable, Joe!
He's left presents!
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.